is pushing into the Midwest. This system will spread light rain and snow across much of Missouri and Iowa, as well as portions of Illinois and Indiana. However, locations near the Great Lakes will remain dry as the area is closer to a center of high pressure. There will be periodic chances of rain or snow through the first half of the weekend. High temperatures today will range from the mid-20s across northeastern Wisconsin to the mid-50s across southeastern Missouri. Lows overnight will range from the single digits across northern Wisconsin to the low 40s across the Boot Heel of Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy with a high of 38. The wind out of the northeast from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy and cold, low 25. The wind from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with a high of 38 and a northeast wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a chance of snow and a low in the upper 20s. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high of 38. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of 25. Monday and Monday night, partly cloudy with a high in the low 40s and a low Monday night in the upper 20s. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and a high in the low 40s. At noon central time across Illinois and Indiana, temperatures were in the 30s. Some light snow and light rain was reported in west central Illinois, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana. At Rockford, 35. O'Hare Airport reported 31 degrees at the top of the hour, 36 at Bloomington, 37 at Mattoon and Carbondale. At South Bend, 31, 33 at Lafayette and Indianapolis, 35 at Terre Haute, 38 in Evansville. And at the top of the hour, Willard Airport reported cloudy skies, 35 degrees. The dew point, 23. The relative humidity, 61%. The wind out of the northeast at 8, giving us a wind chill of 29. The barometric pressure, 30.09 and falling. And at 12:39, 35 degrees in Urbana. The sky is cloudy. European Union leaders are in Brussels trying to work out a solution to the continent's financial troubles, complicating their work. Portugal. It looks like it is heading toward a bailout, becoming the third European country to seek help after Greece and Ireland. NPR's Philip Reeves reports.
Maybe it'll be next month. Perhaps it'll be 2 months after that. Analysts can't be sure. But most agree on one thing. Portugal, a small southern European nation perched on the edge of the Atlantic Ocean, is going under. It too will likely soon need to be bailed out with loans worth tens of billions of dollars, just like Greece and Ireland. Portugal's been limping along for months now, burdened by a big budget deficit and a mountain of debt. Now it has another problem. On Wednesday, opposition parties in Portugal's parliament banded together and threw out the government's latest austerity package. The prime minister responded by resigning. Portugal will be in political limbo until a new government's elected. The markets are taking the news badly. Already high interest rates for Portuguese bonds rose to record levels, way beyond what Portugal can afford, making a bailout even more likely. Portugal's crisis is the talk of the EU summit in Brussels right now. But EU officials are dealing with a larger issue. They're working on a system they hope will enable troubled nations to ride out these storms. So far, they've agreed to put far more money into the EU's bailout fund and to make that fund permanent. Officials hope this will silence those who've been declaring that, in the end, Europe's single currency is doomed to fail. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
This week, Morning Edition has been looking at the problem of youth violence in Chicago. On one side, police, community groups, and schools. On the other side, the gangs that fuel violence. In this report from NPR's Cheryl Corley, we hear the story of one teenager who says he's left gangs behind and is looking forward to a new life.
He is 17 years old.
My name is Deontay Brooms. I'm from Chicago.
Deontay Brooms has a quick and winning smile. He's small with a close-cropped haircut, and he comes from a large family.
My mama got two kids, so it's eight of us.
He lives with his mother, his stepfather, his siblings, and he's a junior at Finger Academy High School. That's a school that gained notoriety a few years ago when cell phone video of the beating death of another student in a fight several blocks from the school went viral on the internet. Roseland, says Deontay, is a rough neighborhood.
There's a lot of shooting every day. You know, I also got shot at once upon a time. My friends also got shot at, I'm just lucky that they ain't got shot, you know.
Lucky, says Deontay, because he's involved now with Ceasefire, the anti-violence group that works to quell trouble, especially shootings on the streets. Here at the Roseland Ceasefire office, Deontay is open about his young life. He's on probation for getting into an altercation with a school security guard. And when he was on the verge of getting kicked out of school, Ceasefire helped prevent it. Deontay says he's very familiar with the violence in his community because he was often a part of it.
I was in a gang. I was a gangster and everything. It happens. You know, I used to be out here robbing people, shooting at people, breaking their houses, doing everything I could to get the money, selling drugs and everything. Everything.
Deontay swivels in his chair and says those days are over now. The gang banging and crime started, he says, because his mother was struggling and he needed things, money, fashionable shoes, things he couldn't get from home. He says he began his life with the gang when he was about 11 or 12.
The reason why I started shooting is because, you know, people hating and everything, you know, hating on me, trying to take advantage of my size and everything, you know. I couldn't beat everybody with the hands, you know. I ain't saying like I lost any fights or nothing like that. It's just if they grab ass, I'm going to get mad.
So if they had their gun.
Yes.
You were going after your gun.
Yes.
Did that happen a lot?
Yes.
University of Chicago researcher Dexter Voisin studies how youth on Chicago's South Side cope with community violence. He says teens growing up in dangerous neighborhoods have a range of coping strategies. They include seeking out nonviolent friends, becoming resigned, striving to do well in school, and for some, fighting back.
And I think part of the sort of code of survival on the streets in terms of, I have to retaliate. If I don't retaliate, it's just a matter of time before I'm dead. I think the coping mechanisms for some boys are the same coping mechanisms that are also putting them in harm's way in terms of homicide threats.
But without a gun, says Deontay, he fears for his safety.
Yeah, I do. You know, when I ain't got it on me, I feel like something could happen. It ain't like I walk around every day with it, you know, because I feel like I don't want to go to jail at all. I ain't got no time to be going to jail trying to get somebody up off me, shanking people and stuff. You know, never had to kill nobody in my life.
Deontay says he's also never harmed anyone with a gun, as far as he knows. But he has lost a couple of friends to gunfire, so he understands when people seek revenge.
Crying over your mans, coughing and everything, make you want to get at anybody. Anybody disrespect you, can get it.
But while he understands the streets, Deontay says he's been working hard to change.
Well, I ain't selling drugs no more. I'm not fighting no more. I'm not reckless no more. Plus, I got people in my ear telling me, like, man, you don't need to do that, man. That's the same thing I used to do when I was young. And I'm looking like, all right, he's speaking real talk. It's real talk.
The U.S. Department of Justice calls Ceasefire strategy effective. It found that the group's interventions and work with young gang members has helped decrease shootings and killings. Harold Pollack, the co-director of the crime lab at the University of Chicago, says there's also a broader public policy challenge that needs to be addressed.
The best thing we could do for many of these young people to keep them out of crime is to make sure they have a job. In this current economic climate, not enough politicians, particularly in Washington, appreciate the importance of that. When we're trying to get money for summer jobs for Chicago youth, it's a heavy lift in Washington to get those kinds of resources.
Deontay hopes Ceasefire can help him find some type of work. He still has some problems at school, but his grades have improved. And he says despite some of the violent stories that have made headline news, some of the violence prevention efforts in Roseland actually seem to be working.
Because right now, you know, it ain't really hectic like it used to be. Right now, it's kind of quiet. Where I'm at, it's kind of quiet. We ain't hear no shooting, nothing like that. Nice little minute.
A nice little minute.
Nice little minute.
Now Deontay says all he wants to do is just make it in life, try to make his high school football team, and hopefully play football in college. He's already selected his school choices. Cheryl Corley, NPR News, Chicago.
Tomorrow on Weekend Edition, the story of a teenage girl who was shot and survived. For more on the series, visit the NPR website, npr.org.
Bonjour. Merci beaucoup.
Kevin Klein speaks French in his new film, Queen to Play, and tells us what advice he would give his younger self.
Lighten up. Have more fun. I was very serious, you know, and lived, ate, drank, slept, acting. And that was before I had a life.
Kevin Klein today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
It's 12:47. This is the Afternoon Magazine. The U.S. Census Bureau finished a massive rollout of data yesterday that painted a detailed picture of America today. One headline, more than 50 million Hispanics now live in the country. NPR's Alex Kellogg reports that will change the politics and identity of many communities.
The Hispanic population in the U.S. is growing by leaps and bounds. More than half of the population growth in the U.S. in the past decade was among Hispanics. Hispanics now account for 16% of the population of the U.S. Bill Fry is a demographer and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute.
They also account for half of the gains in 18 of the states. I mean, that's huge.
These changes will have big implications for the nation moving forward as well. In 10 states and Washington, D.C., the majority of people under 18 are now minorities. In fact, the date for when the nation will become majority-minority keeps moving up. The census now pegs that year at 2042. More minorities are moving to the suburbs instead of cities. And another trend, many counties in the southwest U.S. are now majority-minority. Again, Bill Fry.
And there has been this backlash, something I call a cultural generation gap, largely white older population, largely Hispanic and other minority younger population. And, you know, it'll take us a while to deal with this. The long term for this is a positive for the United States.
Japan and much of Europe is aging, Fry points out. But thanks largely to immigrants, the U.S. has a young, vibrant workforce to draw from for years to come. The changes could have political impacts as well. Congressional districts will change nationwide. In some cases, once solidly majority white districts could become majority Latino. That's one of the consequences of the growth in minority populations far outpacing that of whites. Hispanics and Asians grew at roughly 43% in the past decade, blacks at 11%, and whites at just 1.2%. Alex Kellogg, NPR News, Washington.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Friends of WILL and from English Hedgerow, offering gourmet gift baskets and distinctive fresh flower arrangements. English Hedgerow also offers coordinated decoration for weddings, parties, and corporate events. English Hedgerow, on the corner of University and Lincoln Avenue, Urbana.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 25th of March, 2011. It's the birthday of the young adult novelist Kate DiCamillo, born in Philadelphia,